You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a post-election TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Interface. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And this is our first episode since our election here over in the U.S. And as it stands right now, which I'm sure it's not going to change, Joe Biden has been elected the upcoming president of the United States of America. And of course, this place has absolutely gone to hell. Not because he won, but because there is such a huge divide. You would think that we've been doing this enough that when the votes are counted, everything's recorded properly, and therefore you accept what you get. However, oh my goodness, there is so much going on here about fraud. They're finding thousands of ballots that have been discarded somehow, just dumped in the dumpster, and they're saying they all happen to be for Trump. People are up in arms because polling places refuse to let observers with a legal right to observe what they're doing they're putting up blocks to prevent the observers from seeing the ballots. And at one point, there's the entire polling place was run by Democrats, so therefore they refused to let the Republican observers in. In Wisconsin, there are more votes than there are registered voters. So for that to happen, what more proof do you need of fraud? If you have 100,000 registered voters, you can't have 150,000 votes. It makes no sense. There's just a whole bunch of stuff that is just going on, and Trump, he's digging in his heels. He's suing everyone, and I probably shouldn't say anymore because I don't want to get sued. It's amazing what's going on here. I think COVID has taken a back seat to the election now. Either that, or the virus has spread to a lot of political brains in this country, because they're just all melting down over this. So, what are you going to do, huh? James?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. I thought maybe you'd jump in and say something. But
it's not my place to say anything, right?
I know.
It's not, what's it? I don't have any control over what you guys do over there.
Yeah. We're just all crazy here right now.
Although, actually, one thing I do have to say, which is, what's up with the Electoral College? Why? Well, what's the point of that? I mean, to me, it seems obvious that if, when you make, I mean, by construction, you're making certain areas tipping points, and if you got rid of it, then you wouldn't have tipping points, right? You wouldn't have this argument about whether or not you've won or lost by 6,000 votes in state A or state B. You wouldn't have this kind of knife edge thing. If you remove that, it would just be a lot easier. Or is that too simple?
Oh, no, I agree. The Electoral College is a very complex thing here for some reason. And it makes perfect sense that these people, that they're elected themselves. So they become the Electoral College. And each state has so many Electoral College votes. And there's 538 total. You need 270 to win. Okay. In some states, they are bound by the popular vote. Whatever the popular vote is, that's what that election, that college election, I don't know what they even call the person, each elector, I guess, they must go with the popular vote. In some states, they don't have to go with the popular vote. So it makes no sense. What are we even voting for? What are we spending $1 billion for voting if it could be meaningless? And that's what they're saying Trump did in 2016. Hillary Clinton actually won the popular vote by a whole bunches of votes. But the Electoral College went against that and voted Trump in instead. Is that some kind of fraud? I think it could be. It's a tough thing. I'm not going to pretend I know exactly what it is or what it does, but I think I could take a rough guess that it's just junk and it should be taken out. What is a popular vote for? If you go and you vote and you and more people than the other side, you win. It should be that simple. I don't know why it was ever done this way.
So we have a similar situation in the UK where effectively we don't actually have a nationwide election. We select MPs. And what that means is that you then add up, who's got the most MPs, and then the person that happens to be leading the largest party becomes prime minister, although technically that's not quite true, but it typically is. Now, one of the problems that this kind of system brings up, and it is a different system, by the way, when you have a parliamentary representative democracy versus a presidential system, it is slightly different. But one of the problems that it brings up is that you effectively divide the country into places where people won't ever, there'll be no shift, and there's no point in voting one way or the other. So you have swathes of the country on which only, party A will win, and you have swathes of the country where only party B will win. And then the entirety of the election is always down to around, it's around like 100, 150 seats top that are like in the middle, which it just sounds like when I'm hearing stuff on the news about the Electoral College and how it's important for the, for the Michigan votes or for the Pennsylvania votes, what we're talking about is that it almost doesn't matter where New York or where Texas or where Alaska or whoever, where they come in, that they're kind of like offsettable on either side. And it's only just about the thing in the middle, which if you didn't have that system, you wouldn't have to worry about it, because, a Californian voting is just as important as someone from, from anywhere else, from one of the tighter states, whether it's like North Carolina or Arizona. And I find it odd how, I can understand that there is also an argument that you don't necessarily want to ignore kind of like the smaller places, and you want to give them a bit more, punch above their weight. When was the last time, Party A realistically had any chance of winning? It's the Republicans, right, that wouldn't win New York, even if they were like 40 points ahead, kind of thing. So that kind of seems a bit weird. You've got, is New York like third or fourth largest state, and it's out of play for one of them? It just seems a bit of an odd situation.
Okay. And while you were saying that, I actually did some looking, and like you said, here it says smaller states favored the system as it gave them more of a voice than a nationwide popular vote to decide the president. And it even goes further to say the Electoral College was also favored by Southern states, where slaves made up a large portion of the population. Even though slaves didn't vote, they were counted in the U.S. Census as 3/5 of a person.
Wow.
It really is hard to imagine this world was so bad, so that bad. You know, I can't possibly even imagine a society where, because someone looks different than me, that they become my slave. That just, it baffles my brain. I don't get it. And so, yes, there's a lot of our history we are ashamed of. And this here, this is old school thinking. This is way out old school thinking. There are no slaves anymore. So that part's gone. As far as the smaller states, yeah, okay, I get that point. But still, it should be the will of the people, the majority of the people that vote one way or another. That's the winner. It's imagine you and your, 5 kids, right?
Yeah, at least.
That you know of. you, your wife, and 5 kids, that equals 7. So we're all going to vote on where we would like to go to have dinner tonight. Well, no, you may think that it was a 4-3, and that's a very simple one. You know, 4 want pizza, 3 want Chinese. I'm sorry, no Chinese tonight, it's pizza. But no, because some of your children are really small, they don't have as much of a say as the older children. Therefore, we have to have some kind of way to bump their votes a little bit. And next thing you know, 4-3, you're having Chinese tonight.
I mean, in fairness, you know, we just yield to the wife. It's it's not a democracy that we live under, so it's fine.
It's called a momtocracy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Okay. All right. So, in other news, the Nebraska Cornhuskers won today, and I know that is big news for you guys because we suck. We've been sucking for years. We're going through head coaches. Oh, did I say football team? I'm sorry, guys. I don't mean that little round ball that you kick throughout the field. That's not what I'm talking about here. But anyway, no, we fired coaches that had better records than their current coach. Why do we keep him? Because he's our hometown hero. He played for one of the greatest coaches our program has ever had, Tom Osborne. The problem is, they think, oh, this guy could come in. His name is Scott Frost. Okay. Before he started the job, everyone in this state was wearing hoodies and shirts that said Frost Warning. Okay. And now today, he's got such a terrible record, win-loss record, that I think everybody burned their Frost Warning shirts. But yet, nobody wants him fired because he's our hometown hero. Okay. Eventually, one day, it's going to have to happen. And I'm curious to see how it's going to affect this state. Because, you know, we love our football team. But anyway, so that's all for the Huskers. Anything with you? Any news on your side?
Okay, I mean, only the fact that I've just Googled your Cornhuskers. Huskers. And it seems like you guys have a guy called Colonel Cobb as your mascot.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this stuff doesn't happen around here.
It's not. Because Omaha, Nebraska, and Iowa area, our number one produce is corn. We produce corn here, so that's why they call us the Corn Huskers. But, and you're right, you know, people in the stadium with those corn heads, you know, hats they put on their heads, and it's like a big ass thing, corn on the cob. So, hey, but you know,
cool,
yeah, until this year, I mean, they had like, I don't remember what the number was, but the number of consecutive sellouts. meaning that every seat in the entire stadium was bought for since 1970 something. And of course, it took COVID for that to get broke. And I was watching the game before we came on, and the stadium is mostly empty. So now, the way Nebraska treats its Cornhuskers, I would not be at all surprised to find out that people still bought the tickets just to keep that consecutive sellout going, even though they couldn't go to the game. So, all right. In other news, this is my last news story. Jordy LaForge is being sought after for a very important job. You know what I'm talking about?
I am not aware of this, no.
Okay.
Well, the Jordy LaForge?
The Jordy LaForge. LeVar Burton. I know that, I'm sorry to bring up sad events. I don't want you to cry about this, James.
Oh, but I've just Googled this, and wow. That would be cool.
Yeah, yeah. After 30-some years, our beloved Alex Trebek has passed away, as we record this, 6 days ago, on Sunday, the 8th, from prostate cancer, and he was the host of Jeopardy. It's absolutely one of the most popular game shows in our history. And unfortunately, we sadly lost him to pancreatic cancer. You guys don't see this. We're not a video podcast. But on my wrist is one of these silicone bracelets. They're little rubberized bracelets that, you know, you can get for different causes. I wear two for our first responders, for police. One for police, the thin blue line. One for firefighters, it's a red line. And I wear one that's purple, which is a color for pancreatic cancer, in honor of my childhood friend, Pat O'Malley, who sadly lost his life to this disease or this cancer back in 2015. Unfortunately, he found out about it when it was too late, and the shit just ravaged his body. So I wear this on my wrist to, you know, signify it's purple and has his name on it. So it is absolutely terrible. What's really sad, one of the reasons I also wear the thin blue line, was my adulthood best friend, Jay Urban was his name. He died 2018 from lung cancer, and he was an Omaha police officer. He would take me on a couple ride-alongs, and, you know, he'd pull people over. He never really wrote much tickets, but he was a traffic enforcement officer, so more along the lines of accident investigations. He was a certified accident reconstructionist, so obviously this man was so super intelligent to be able to determine trajectories of vehicles based on where these cars land, where the skid marks are, how far away they are, and so on, to determine what happened in a fatality accident or serious injury or any accident that involves a city vehicle. He would investigate those as well. So, yes, he retired quite a few years before he died. And it's sad, you know, we used to go out with him once in a while. There's a pizza joint here called Big Fred's. And Fred was also an Omaha police officer when he retired, opened up his restaurant. And every cop that came in, they automatically got a 50% discount. So we would go there with Jay in uniform, get a lot of pizza, a lot of stuff with his 50% discount. It was very good. And he wasn't the type to really engage in a lot of activities because he had to focus or be available when a serious accident came in. He can't be in the side of the road writing somebody a speeding ticket and then a fatality accident, has to wait till he's done, or if he gets a drunk driver, he's screwed. But so we got in the car. He drove about three blocks to the north. He took a right, went about a mile to the east. He took another right, went about a mile and a half to the south, took another right. It was almost like he was in a square going round and round and round. I thought, ugh. And on the radio, we would hear radio holding five calls. Any units available, please acknowledge. And I go, hey, aren't you going to answer any of those? He goes, hell no, I can't. He can't. He can't go into other calls unless they were like help an officer or something that, you know, everybody needed to respond to. So I miss them both. I really, truly do. So I don't know what Alex went through, but I know what my friend went through. And if it was anything what Pat went through, I really feel for Alex because it was devastating. It was terrible. So, and he filmed his last show about a week or two before he died. And he has so many shows in the can that they are still showing his shows today. And his last one will be broadcasted on Christmas Day. Now, how cool is that?
So that's pretty cool.
That is very cool. So, okay, guys, let's go ahead and go back into interface unless you have more you would like to discuss.
No. I'm good.
Okay. Well, then, this is the third episode of Season 7 of TNG. It was first aired on October 4th, 1993, written by Joe Manosky and directed by Robert Weimer. Potato, potato. And guest starring, I always liked her too, Madge Sinclair as Sylva LaForge. And if any of you are wondering, hey, Blue, is that the same Madge Sinclair that was on Trapper John MD? Rest assured, it was. Okay? So there you go, James. I know you were asking me about that earlier.
I was, yes.
Yes. Yes, and we all know what Trapper John M.D. was. So I ain't going to mention it. We have Warren Munson as Marcus Holt and Ben Vereen as Dr. LaForge. So what do we think about this episode? Real quick, very, very snippy here. Or snippet, I don't know what I'm saying. Episodes like this and future episodes such as Sub Rosa explain why there's not a season 8. James, how about you?
No. This one is not as bad. This one's fine. This one isn't like, oh, it's really, really awful. Now, it's not the strongest episode in the world, but it's not, you know, it's not Sub Rosa. Actually, I'm not even sure I'd hate Sub Rosa that much. but it's not cancel the show bad. And anyway, I'm sure, you know, that they would have, they obviously had Voyager, they obviously had the S9 by this point, they have TNG. They kind of like knew that they were going. I'm sure they knew well in advance. I don't think people waited to see what the seventh season of Trek was like before cancelling the thing. That's not what they were doing. But this one's fine, right? I mean, it's a bit of a mediocre episode, but it's there or thereabout. It's an interesting idea. Or am I out on the limb here?
I don't know. It just, some of it was kind of, it was interesting, you know, this probe. You know, I'm looking at a picture right now of Geordi staring into a, console screen, and he sees the probe. Mm-hmm. That was pretty fascinating on how they did something like that. Like, I'm looking at myself, I'm a handsome probe. Okay. And what I didn't understand. Okay, so why? Okay, so it's a probe. He sees a probe, but we see Geordi. Why would they have given so much detail to bring Geordi's body into this? Is it simply because they needed his hands to actually tactile touch things?
Okay, so about the episode. I think Geordi, when you see Geordi, I think you mean you should be looking at a probe. Right. I think that they're using Geordi as a way just to show, you know, just basically as a stand-in to make it easier. The same way that in Tapestry you see old Picard, but everyone else sees young Picard. So I think everyone sees probe, we see Geordi. Now, I don't know why then we see Geordi without visor. That seems a bit weird. And then there is this scene at the end of the teaser, which is when he looks into the mirror, and then we see Geordi, which is probe, looking into mirror, which reflects probe back, but then Geordi seems to suggest that he sees Geordi, which that doesn't make any sense at all. So, unless he was being sarcastic and he said, hey, I'm a mighty looking probe here. But even if he was being sarcastic, Geordi can still see himself, right? He's got a visor on. He is clearly blind. He clearly sees differently. But I would imagine that if a probe can send in images into his head that's different to the visor, he must have access to that somewhere. So, I've got to the point where I think when you see Geordi, just think probe. And that's it. It's cheaper for them to use Geordi than to use probe.
Right. Do you think it only worked because of the visor and the way the system he has to his brain?
Well, no. So Riker says that he can actually use it, and I think everyone could use it. I think that because Geordi had the visor in it, it probably made it easier for him to use.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how that's true, but you can imagine that... You can imagine that there might have been a connector or fast speed connector that made it easier. I'm not sure.
Okay, because they spent a lot of time on how much tolerance Geordi can put up with, and I thought, why not just throw Data in there? Boom, he can go down as fast as he wants, get the ship, come back out. Well, obviously, you need Geordi down there to find Mama.
And also, if you think about it. What is a probe, right? So if you're going to send the probe down, which is a bit of machinery, then why not send Data down? To me, it's not clear that Data wouldn't have been able to go down physically himself. And then if you do want to invent something saying that Data can't go down physically, then surely Data can interface with this. Now, maybe there's the cop out there, which is, oh, it's designed to be used by humans, blah, 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 blah. But okay, I think it's a bit of a stretch, right?
Of course.
And this thing about tolerance, I mean, was this tolerance thing introduced as anything other than to add a bit of tension? As in, you know, please put me at 85%, 90%, 100% beyond the recommended limit. I mean, did we ever really think that Geordi was going to be in danger or this was really going to be the threat? You know, the idea of the main threat of the show being how high you want to turn up your gain, to me, it seemed not particularly... That's not a memorable villain, right? Right. How high you've gained the signal.
Okay, here's another thing. Did they even explain how this probe ever got into place? Did Worf launch this probe, or did they just happen to have one on that ship? Where does come from?
No, I think the probe must have been launched from the Enterprise.
Okay.
You can't just rely on picking up probes.
Can you imagine how this probe could have been used in other previous episodes? I mean, I could see uses for it. I don't know why it took 7 seasons for this kind of a probe to be functional or usable, and we'll never see it again. One and done.
But then again, is this probe really any different than any other probe that we've seen, other than the fact that it's connected to Geordi? I mean, could this just, you know, whenever they say, you know, send a level 3 probe or a Mark 3 probe or whatever the terminology would be, could this not just be it?
Oh, I don't know. And here's another thing. I mean, at one point during this episode, Geordi says, "Hey, I need a phaser beam right there." And he holds out his hand and boom, he's a phaser beam. Why didn't he bring a phaser? Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. But he's got a uniform. So why does Geordi, why does Geordi even have wearing clothes as this probe? But he's got a uniform. He's got his comm badge. He's got his pips on.
No, so I think the imagery of Geordi is just for us.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's just for us. He could be like a, you know, a naked whale baby for all we care.
Right.
Which actually, by the way, that is something that's a little bit of a nitpick, I suppose. That when Geordi goes up the ladder and he touches things, of course the probe's not going up a ladder with legs or pulling things with arms, right? They kind of mention that he's using a tractor beam, and they kind of mention that, you know, a lot of this is just projected. But to me, it wasn't even clear that the probe would be able to fit into the Jeffries tube. It seemed too big for the Jeffries tube, at least standing upright. So in my mind's eye, I had this idea that as Geordi was crawling, the probe would have to be like at right angles and kind of also attempting to crawl through the Jeffries tube. You could have very easily imagined a situation where the probe would get stuck and Geordi wouldn't be able to move.
Right. You know, and I also noticed, like you said, he's going up the Jeffries tube steps, but yet in the lab, he's standing still with his arms down.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, if he's got the sensation that he's actually moving, why isn't he actually on steps then to simulate the movements for this probe?
Or better still, why doesn't he just get put into the holodeck? Because the holodeck has all of that built in to begin with, right? This idea of being able to move physically but be effectively confined within a limited space that exists. I have to say though, I kind of like the like rubber, you know, diving suit that Geordi is in. You know, I really don't mind it. But also at the same time, I look at it and I look at the tubes and stuff that have been threaded through, and I think, why is that needed at all? I mean, Riker mentions, I think it's Riker mentions, well, why the suit? And he goes, well, it gives his body something to, like, you know, react against. And it almost felt like it was a virtual reality suit that he was putting himself on so he could feel things. But I have to say, I don't think that's the primary concern of the mission. You know, that the fact that Geordi can go up to a fire and go, ooh, that's hot, it's not really, you know, I don't think that's needed. I don't think he needs to be able to discriminate between whether or not someone has come and plucked a chest hair off him or poked him in the ribs. You know, he doesn't need to have that sensation. So the idea of him being wrapped up in it seems a little bit weird.
It does, especially since he's not actually moving his limbs at the same time he's climbing. But another thing, you know, I find it hard to believe that he burned his hand in real life because the probe hand, our perception of the probe having a hand, burned himself. So, but I think that was a feedback problem in the suit, right?
Yeah, but again, I think that's a stupid thing. I don't think the episode needed for dramatic tension the idea that Geordi couldn't go above, you know, above, you know, 100% or whatever. And right. I didn't think that we needed that. I think it was enough for there to be a mystery that Geordi, you know, this episode is very similar to the Barclay episode, right? With the Realm of Fear, except the fact that with Barclay, he's actually overcoming a fear. Whereas here we've got Geordi holding out hope against his mum and the crew still being alive. But the idea is that, you know, they go into something, they experience something that no one else does, and it's driving him crazy that no one's, you know, that everyone else has given up and everyone else is writing it off. I don't think you need the additional threat that Geordi's going to burn his hands or that he won't be able to cope. And I don't know why they did that, because as soon as you then make a statement in canon that your hands are going to get burned when you get hot and it's going to be, you know, an overreaction, I look at it and I think, really? I mean, if that's true, you should just turn down the sensitivity on the suit, right? Mm. It to me, it just felt like it was that was like a something that wasn't necessary.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that, James. The reason I say that is if there's no consequence, visible consequence, then it's hard for us to believe just by turning the tolerance up that he's actually going to be in danger. They turned it up too high. It burned his hand. They turn it up any higher. What else is going to get burned? And I think that perhaps we needed to see that to actually gauge the risk that is happening.
Okay, sure. Sure. I think that, but if you want to put it down, if you want to frame it as Geordi is at risk here, then you obviously do need it. I just don't think you necessarily need to frame it as Geordi is at risk, because Geordi has a lot on the line, right? He is potentially given up on, you know, on his mother, and I think that that was enough of a story to that was enough of an emotional commitment, an emotional kind of hit for Geordi to hang the story on. I didn't feel it necessary that Geordi was going to have to kill himself in order to get down into the probe. I didn't right. need that. But look, I'm not paid to write Star Trek, so no. I can very easily be wrong here.
Yeah, possible. Even a throwaway line that takes 5 seconds of Geordi explaining to Data, look, we tried to hook you up to it. It didn't work. It has to be me. I have to go down and do it. That would have been all the explanation I would have needed as to why a computer can't hook up to a computer and do this probe. Like you said, why couldn't Data even go there himself and do it? I think it was about for Data to do that, they can't beam him there. And if they get a shuttle, it would probably suck the shuttle down into the problem as well. That's why it has to be the probe that does it. And nobody better suited for it than Geordi. I don't know. Maybe try Deanna. See what part of her gets burned. Anyway. All right. So there we go. So we start out with Geordi walking around the ship. A ship. And I thought, well, for God's sake, it finally happened. When you first see this, you don't know what it's about. You don't know the story, you think, huh, the 24th century, and I thought they'd never give Geordi normal eyes, or eyes that look normal, but do the same thing as his visor. So you think Dr. Crusher must have done something really special, because we see Geordi checking out fumes in the Jefferies tube, and his eyes looked normal. It was pretty cool.
By the way, one thing about that. I don't think they should have taken the visor away from Geordi. I think that there's something very powerful about having an implicit reminder that Geordi is, you know, he is blind, yet that doesn't matter. And I think the idea of them just giving him eyes, and to a certain extent, you know, the weird funky colored eyes from First Contact onwards, to me, it takes the disability and it hides it, and I would much rather them say, look, it's something that exists, but it is overcome, but it's still visible, than it's something that exists and is overcome and is invisible, because at that point, you know, if you're going to just give surgery to everyone that's blind and completely replace them with eyes that look and feel normal, and you can't tell the difference. In a way, I think it takes away from the inclusiveness that I think, you know, Trek's really going for.
Mm.
But anyway, so I appreciate that, you know, they didn't like the idea of having a visor, but I actually think it's one of the coolest parts of TNG.
Right. You know, and I always feel weird when I make a comment like this about other men, but actually, Geordi has a really nice set of big brown eyes.
And to, you know, to have them hidden behind this visor, exclusively through the entire series, I kind of like this. I kind of like the way they did this. As much as I also like DS9, I don't remember the name of the episode, but it's where, you know, Sisko is a writer, right? He's a newspaper.
Oh, Far Beyond the Stars.
Is that the name? I thought of something about stars, but I couldn't imagine it. But everybody on the series came in as their
makeup.
Yeah, without their normal. Everybody was as actors really are. I kind of like that. It was kind of cute because you always say, "Geez, what does General Martok look like?" Outside of his Klingon head. And now it's actually in an episode that we find that out. I thought it was pretty ingenious there. Mm-hmm. Not as much as Trials and Tribulations. That takes the cake and ingeniousness there. But, okay. So, yeah. Once in a while, I think, give LeVar's real personality, because without his visor and the way his eyes function with this smile and everything, I'm thinking, hey, I like seeing Geordi's real face without the visor. It's kind of nice once in a while. But anyway, that's just my opinion. So like you say, he climbs up the tube to find where the source of the smoke is, and it's over 2,000 degrees. You still don't know he's a visor at this point, do we? Or no, I'm sorry, he's a probe at this point, do we?
No, we begin to get weird and wonderful things like him walking into flames and stuff like that, and him behaving in a weird way. But you don't know until right at the end when he looks into the mirror, or into the panel, I suppose.
Yeah, I think he says, "Hey, I forgot what a handsome guy I am," and then we cut to commercial, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very interesting. It is an interesting premise that he can actually work as a probe. Geordi, he becomes a tricorder in this. He becomes a phaser in this. It's a cute premise. I don't know. Some of the story got a little bit far-fetched. Geordi, the last time anyone saw your mom was over 300 light years away. Why would you think she came back here? And, you know, he's sad that his mom is missing. He doesn't want to accept it. And another question is, these beings that were snagged from the planet by this ship, how are they able to come up with his mother?
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. So the first thing that I find interesting about this episode, it's not interesting, but it's I was watching it and I was thinking that do the aliens know anything, or are they just allowing Geordi to tell them? Because when I watched it, I saw that when he first meets his mum, you obviously don't know what the alien looks like. You just get you see that Geordi sees the person, and at that point he recognizes her as his mum. At which point you kind of think, okay, does the alien that is being misidentified by his mum, does she need to have information? Is this part, her having to read his mind? And when I watched the episode, it sounded like, at least in the first scene, that all of the information that she would need was volunteered by Geordi. So Geordi said, "Oh, hey, mum, it's you. It's me, it's Geordi." And then he mentioned about, where's the Hera? And he volunteered all of this information. It wasn't that the mum was saying things that the mum wouldn't know about if she was just an alien. And I thought, that might be a little bit of clever writing going on there. But then I noticed, I think it was in the second scene, the alien is clearly saying stuff that the alien wouldn't know about unless the alien was reading Geordi's mind. And I kind of felt that that was slightly disappointing, because for a second I thought that they had written it in a way where it seemed reasonable that there was just a misunderstanding here and the alien, like, you know, ran with it. But by the second conversation that these guys have, it's just very clear that you have to assume that the aliens read in minds, which I think is a little bit of a stretch.
Well, they have to. No, they have to, because, I mean, he didn't go into this probe onto that ship and go, "Geez, guys, it's a shame my mom's missing. She's a black female. She's got poofy black hair. She stands about this foot tall. Oh, I have a picture of her right here." I mean, they have to be able to get it somewhere.
Okay, so the fact of the vision, though, in terms of the visuals, I was happy to just allow Geordi to have that as part of his imagination. So the fact that, you know, he's obviously a probe, he's obviously interpreting things, et cetera, et cetera. But when it comes down to the words, I kind of thought that they had written it in a way where the woman didn't need, you know, wasn't volunteering any information. And that was true for, like, the first scene. But for subsequent scenes, they just said, "Ah, screw it. You know, we'll just, you know, we'll just go with this woman being able to mind read." And at that point, I think that it then becomes different, right? It then becomes, I think you're asking too much of this alien of the week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then I thought, you know, what would have saved these aliens time? Instead of pretending to be mama and have a nice little conversation with her son, come as something and say, "This is what's happened. Will you help us?" I think, you know, Picard and everyone, they would have gotten together and figure out, "Hey, let's help these people." But they spent too much time trying to convince Geordi that, you know, she's his mommy. It makes no sense why they would have done it that way. I mean, why would she need Geordi to come down in this ship further so that all she could do is put her hands up to his head and zap him somehow? What was that supposed to do? It almost looked like an attack. That's what I looked at it as.
No, I agree with that. I have nothing really to excuse that.
Okay. So the USS Ramon has become trapped in the atmosphere of a gas giant planet. I think it's called Marajin 7, something like that. And the interface is designed to get the probe wherever is needed to fix repairs and get the ship out and save the crew. So, but, you know, during the mission, they find out Geordi's mom, who is a Starfleet captain of the USS Hera.
Yeah.
And the ship is lost. So, I guess it's human nature. You know, Geordi, do you want to talk about it? Are you okay? Do you want to take a couple days off? I mean, those people have been down there for how long now? I guess it could go a couple days if you want to spend a little time contemplating where your mother is, or maybe call the family, see if there's any news. Do you think they should have done any of that? Because, I mean, it was Riker who was kind of like, "Geordi, take some time off. Let it go. You don't need to worry about it. I'll do the job." Which, honestly, I don't even think Riker could have done it. I think they required the visor device or Data, another computer. But since they didn't do that, even the android can't do it. It has to be the neural interface from Data's or Geordi's visor. I think that's why they did it. I don't know for sure. They don't really say that, do they?
I can't remember if they said explicitly, but that's what, you know, that's where I land. I land that it's, yeah. It's coming in that direction.
It's got to be. So, but hey, I'm fine. I'm going to do the job. They're going to look for her. I'm going to do my job. And he does. And I find that admirable. Some people will just sit there, you know, your mother might have been killed, or your wife or someone might have been killed in on her ship. And some people will sit there in 10 forward with a drink, go, what am I going to do now? So, hey, no, Geordi wants to get back to work. And he does.
Okay, so I'm going to come across as a real heartless person here, but did the story really communicate kind of the, you know, the clear statement that Geordi's mum had been lost? You know, because to me it was like, oh, we've not heard from the Hera, but the number of times that we've not heard from X or we've not heard from Y, and they end up, you know, you end up finding them on a colony in 50 years' time after having followed a gangster's recipe for how to run civilization. You know, there's a lot of this stuff that always goes on, and I kind of thought that I kind of was more in line with Geordi's thoughts here, which is that, oh, look, they've just gone on an unscheduled shore leave or something. Now, obviously not quite, because you're always a little bit worried if you can't raise them. But the idea that even before Starfleet had officially called off the search and declared them lost, Geordi was almost expected to have given up. To me, that seemed a bit odd. I would have preferred them to say, look, you know, we found debris or something.
Yeah.
Or we found some indication that something's clearly went wrong. And then he can look at it and he can go, oh, tech. It actually is more of a warp tunnel kind of thing. Okay. So I kind of felt that within the storyline, they were expecting Geordi to be further along the grief process than I thought he would have been given the evidence that he was supplied with.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the episode you might have been alluding to, maybe they accidentally landed on a bar, visited a planet where, you know, one gang is hitting the other gang, and one boss, and there's seven bosses in this planet, and they're all hitting each other, and they all want heaters. And is that where you were going with that one?
Well, I mean, just the number of times where ships disappear, right? And then you find them later. It's not uncommon.
Right.
For these things, and you know, unless you've actually found a spaceship that's blown up and there are no survivors, to me it seemed a bit they seem to be very quick at giving up or expecting Geordi to have given up. And also, you know, the husband, right? The husband seemed to have given up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it was like everybody was intentionally trying to piss off Geordi, or not piss him off, but, you know, Geordi, it's okay. Let out your feelings. She's gone.
What do you mean she's gone? I've already cashed in the life assurance.
Yeah, right. How do they know that? I mean, how long were they searching before they said, oh boy, I think somebody needs to inform Geordi of the Forge? Okay, how many people were on that ship that she's in command of? Let's say it's not a galaxy class. Let's say it's a Voyager type. 143 people, right? Did Starfleet notify 143 commanding officers that someone under his command is missing, but we're still going to keep searching? It was just seemed too fast. Too fast. I would have searched a month before. But I don't know, at what point would you have wanted to tell Geordi that his mom is missing?
I mean, I think that by all means, keep captains in the loop. But I think you have to kind of mention, well, yeah, I think the idea of reaching out to 150 families or maybe even more, and then kind of saying, oh, but don't worry, we're still going to be searching for another 48 hours or 72 hours, and then having to contact them 3 days later and say, well, we're still searching, we didn't find much. It just didn't seem right. I would have expected them to have been more definitive.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Geordi, he goes back to work, and he's back in his probe, and he pretty much finds everybody's dead. He even opens the storage area and finds even more dead crew. So, everybody on the Ramon,
yep.
I think it was, is dead. So it's time to just leave now. But no, we're not going to do that. So anyway. But Jed, just as he determines they're all dead, a fire pops up. Next thing you know, Geordi is screaming in pain from burned hands. At least that's what it looks like as we see him as a probe. But then they shut the interface down, and we look down, and what do we see? Geordi's hands are severely burned.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just a simple... There was a feedback, Captain.
Yeah, I don't buy this. It still, to me, it doesn't work. It doesn't feel like it should work like that.
Do I hear a piano?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. That's my son. He's practicing upstairs.
Okay, let's listen to this a couple seconds. I want to hear that. Actually, I don't hear anything unless you talk, and then I hear it in the back. So you'll have to make a sound of something.
I can make it a little bit quiet. But yeah, he's upstairs and he's practicing. And he is, well, he's not really practicing. He's trying to learn Bohemian Rhapsody. And I don't think that counts as practicing.
Sure it does. Come on.
He's not learning it. He's not learning the piece. He's just, he thinks it would be cool to know it.
How old is he?
14. Actually, 14 this week. So he's just, 3 days ago, it was his birthday. And we had a party today.
Sweet. All right. Sounds good. And, one thing here. I've been meaning to bring up about what we discussed earlier, and that was Jeopardy. And the reason I brought up LeVar Burton is because there's a petition going around with a whole bunch of signatures that people want LeVar Burton to replace Alex Trebek as the host of Jeopardy. And I gotta wonder. I don't see it. I don't really see LeVar as a very super intelligent guy that, you know, because Alex was. Alex was really good at what he did. And I might not have seen Steve Harvey take over Family Feud from Richard Dawson either, but Steve Harvey's 1,000 times better at Family Feud than any host they've ever had before him. So you never know. But do you see LeVar Burton as a game show host?
Yeah, I mean, why not? What do you got to lose?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. At least you should, you know, audition for it, whatever that is. Okay, back to the show. So, Geordi gets his hands burned, take him to sick bay, and he's fine. You know, Dr. Crusher heals it. She did good work today. Yeah. But now it's time to contact his dad. Okay. Why would it make more sense instead of Starfleet contacting Picard, which is probably protocol? Couldn't the notification been done by Geordi's dad instead? Wouldn't it have been better?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Yeah, you would expect them to contact next of kin, right? So that, you know, I don't know to what extent Geordi's dad knew about it before Picard knew about it.
Right. So I wonder, you know, had he said, let me contact my son. Let me handle that. Or, you know, that somebody just put out a communication to... Oh, no, it was a live person, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the admiral that phoned.
Okay. So another admiral was phoning Dr. Picard while this admiral was phoning Geordi. Not Dr. Picard, Dr. LaForge. Dr. LaForge. I'm going to keep that in. I don't even edit the show anymore. So one admiral was notifying Dr. LaForge, as this admiral was notifying Geordi LaForge. Who knows? They might have been in the same room. We may have had a bank of phones where admirals were calling 143 people's families. Now we know what admirals do, huh? So
you think there's like a there's a phone bank of admirals?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what their job is. Just like a telemarketer, they place calls with bad news. It gets to the point where they probably just have a script. Hello, insert name here, Captain Picard. I regret to inform you that da 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 da. Da. Have a good day. Johnson out. Okay, no, that ain't what happened, but still, it would be funny. And it looks like Geordi's dad is a first officer, if I've got my pips right.
Anyway, how is he a first officer? I thought he was a doctor.
Yeah, not a first officer. That's right. He was wearing blue, and he had the three commanders, which is what Crusher would have as well.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. That makes perfect. Well, if a doctor wanted to go into command and become a first officer or a captain, did Beverly give up her medical license when she became captain in the future?
I would have thought so. Yeah, I mean, the captain's too busy to be doctor, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Okay. Well, fine. You can believe she's dead if you want to, Daddy. But until I see some hard evidence, I'm going to hold out hope. Can't argue with that, Geordi. Have a good day. Okay. So what do you think about LaForge visiting Data's quarters as he's analyzing poetry? He's watching a dark screen and analyzing poetry. Do you think maybe they spent too much on the budget for the probe effects that they couldn't give Data an actual visual on his computer?
Okay, so that poetry thing was... I think that poetry thing was just stupid.
Ridiculous.
I mean, I might be... Yeah, I'm probably grumpier than many, but that's ridiculous.
It was totally ridiculous. You know what I would have liked to see Data doing instead was hooking Spot up to things on the computer, and then he has stuff all over his head and his body trying to determine what Spot is thinking at this moment. And then Geordi walks in on that. How cool would that have been? As Spot's readout on the computer, his thought says, meow. He looks sad. Meow. Right?
It sounds a little bit too much like animal cruelty here, though.
Well, okay. I don't know. I mean, hook something up to a cat's head. They're not going to shave him down or, drill it in his head. That would be cruel. But they're just going to put it right over his fur, and the computer's going to try and read his thoughts, and, like I said, meow, he looks sad, meow, I'm hungry, meow. Every time he meows, something pops up on the screen. I'm hungry, meow, he looks sad, meow. Take this damn thing off me before I rip your face off, meow. I mean now, mister. So, anyway. That would have made it better than a blank screen. And so he says, Jason, would you like to talk about your mother? No! Okay. I'll go back to my poetry. And of course, Data, you gave up too fast. I mean, what is a computer going to do? What is an Android going to do? Would you like to talk about your mom? No! Okay. Do you think Data is even capable? Should even be capable of analyzing what he just said and think, I bet he does want to talk about it. No, the answer is either one or zero, and he said zero. Boom, done. Is it even likely that they can give Data so much personality that he can actually see that Geordi's lying? So anyway,
okay, so, I mean, so Data's gone from what? Data's gone from being very, very childlike to here being expected to know and pick up on these subtle hints that, you know, another person might also struggle with, like a proper human. So, also, why is Geordi, why is he pushing back against Data anyway? It's not as if he has pride or anything like that, right? He doesn't need to, he should be quite comfortable and quite open with Data.
Well, he should be, because Data's going to accept what he says. Data, you gave up too quick. I did? Yes. So you do want to talk about it. Well, clearly! clearly I do. Couldn't you figure that out yourself? No. It's like talking to the computer. Computer, I don't want to talk about it. And, she responds, sure you do, Commander. Let's discuss what you're feeling. No, it's going to clear itself out and go on to the next computation. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So it's time to go back. This time, the bizarre thing happens. That's when he sees his mom as if she was really there. She has no time to explain, but she says the Raman needs to go down to the surface to rescue the crew of the Hera. And even, Crusher tries to convince him, that's not your mom. They're way, way far away. How could it possibly be? So maybe Geordi's lost his mind. I know. Let's go see Deanna. I'm sure she's going to have some insights. Was that a waste of time or what?
I thought Deanna was fine in this. I mean, I think that she offered everything that a professional should be expected to say in this situation. It's just that Geordi's not he's not in that state yet. He's not going to accept it.
No. Right. So when Barclay had a goofy encounter with the counselor, she went to see Geordi. Now, Geordi's got almost the same encounter with her. Who does she go see now? Riker? And here's another question. What happened to patient-counselor confidentiality? So when she walks out, I should have mentioned that during that episode as well. So when she marches down to engineering and says, I just had the strangest visit from one of your officers. Bam! She just broke confidentiality, even saying that much alone.
So does that apply, like, in the military?
I would think, like, so.
Are you allowed to date, doctor-patient confidentiality in those cases? Like, you wouldn't want, you wouldn't want your chief engineer to turn up and to be, to be struggling with, a drug problem, right? You'd expect that kind of thing to be flagged. I'm not too sure you don't think so?
No, because when you figure confidentiality, the doctor can get the message across without actually giving details. She could have went down to engineering and said, I'm certifying your officer as unfit to resume duties at this time. And quite frankly, I think that's all the boss should know. Either he's fit to work or not.
Yeah, I can see that. I understand that. I think that. But how many times has Crusher ever or Deanna ever claimed that someone's not fit? Right.
Right.
It's plus, that's never happened.
Yeah. Plus, this year is 1993. There were no HIPAA violation or HIPAA laws at the time, or what we call HIPAA laws. Health information, something, privacy act, but I thought there were two P's, so HIPPA, or is it HIPA? But still, there were no HIPAA laws at that time, so if there were, I think the writers probably might have incorporated that somewhere. But because, honestly, you know, like, hey, let's talk about the doctor. Janeway walks in and says, you know, doctor, is Ensign Wildman pregnant? I can't tell you that. And he holds his guns. He holds his duty sacred for about 4.7 seconds and says, she was going to tell you later. I mean, okay. What is it, a boy or a girl? Oh, you're killing me here. It's a girl. Half Katarian too. That's what I thought. Walks away. I mean, you know, where is privacy in the future? Apparently there is none. But yeah, in the military, I think it would be the same thing. Your gunnery sergeant should not be pulling triggers for a while. That's all I'm going to tell you. You know, that's it. Okay, anyway. So, again, okay, so now we have, Deanna didn't work. Let's try Riker. Let's try Riker. See if he can get Geordi to relate to his situation. And he tells a story about the death of his mother, you know, because Geordi's got to move on. The visor hides a lot of LaVar's expressions, but not today. am I right? Could you look at his face and you could see his blood boiling as Riker's continuing the situation about his dead mom? There was a body, and like he says, there was a body. There was a funeral. My mom is just lost somewhere. Why don't you people stop it? Did you get that from his face?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that they're expecting Geordi to be further along in the grief process. It's, you know, it's different to say that the ship has been out of contact for a week versus here's a body and we've put it in the ground. You know,
right.
There is a big difference there. And I'm kind of on Team Geordi at this point as to what the reaction you'd expect the reaction to be.
Right. I mean, they, in the 24th century, do they go straight from denial to acceptance? I think there's a couple more steps somewhere in there that they would have to go through first, and there's no body. How's he supposed to go through acceptance if, especially since they're still searching? They haven't called off any search. Mm-hmm. Once they call off the search, then you go on to the next phase and get to acceptance. So you're right. It was crazy. They were trying to, come on, Geordi, let it all out, get it done. No, it doesn't work that way. So, okay, so another thing is the captain, I think I went past this point here, but Picard decides, no, Geordi, we're not going to do anymore. I'm not doing any, we're not going to be risking your life. You know, it's my life to risk. I want to go and help my mom. No, sorry. And there's something you don't see very often in a Starfleet officer. He gets up, slams the table or the chair against the table in front of Picard because of Picard's order. That was a ballsy move. And I didn't expect Picard to be so lenient about it. Did you?
No, actually, I'm not sure that I recall this, or I didn't note it. I mean, he's obviously frustrated, but I don't recall this being something that you would have expected him to be, you know, called up and or thrown in the brig over.
Oh, no. You know, Picard, if it had been somebody who was angry about something else other than his missing mother, yeah, that might get a little bit of discipline for him. But yeah, he takes a chair and slams it against the conference room table. And that's when Picard stops him. You know, I understand what you're going through, and kind of talks him down a little bit. Yes, sir. And that's it. That's all Picard had to do. It was none of this, "Excuse me, Commander, come back here right now." You know, something I went through last month. But, who cares? So, that's cool. And just like every good Starfleet officer, the captain made a decision, and everybody will go for it, will accept that decision and go on. In a normal crew. But not here. Okay, I get LaForge going into this lab and deciding he's just going to hook himself up as if he could. And flick the switch and run into the little, I call it Lol's bed, because, I mean, she was in this little device too. And so was Locutus as well. But, you know, he needs somebody to run it. And here comes Data walking in. Good intuition for the android. I knew you were going to do this. Mm-hmm. And we knew it too. What I never expected is for Data to go, "You're going to throw away your career. I might as well throw away mine too." No. What do you think of that one?
So I was surprised that Geordi ended up managing to get Data to help him. Yeah. But they kind of needed it, right? He wasn't able to do it by himself. No. It's the obvious choice, despite it not necessarily working.
Right. Yeah. And is it just me, or is Worf a little bit slow on the uptake? Because he was down in this probe for quite a while before Worf says, "Oh, hey, I must have missed that. Somebody's using the probe." You know, who could it be? Yeah, as if they
That'll take a while to figure out.
Yeah, try and find out who is there. Let me inform me when you find the answer, Mr. Worf. So, poker.
It's like when they steal the shuttlecraft, right? It's
Yeah.
No.
There's something like, "Oh yeah, that's what you get. There's an unscheduled shuttle launch." Really? Yes. You stop it? No. Why not? I didn't know about it. Well, when did you find out about it?
After it was done.
I mean, what? Could a shuttle really get so far away that they can't beam the thing back into its shuttle bay or put a tractor on it? Why is it people get away? I think we discussed this before, that Worf might be the worst security chief in Starfleet's history.
I mean, I would expect them to require confirmation to open the shuttle bay doors. I think if that's what you have as a policy, almost all of these instances go away.
Is there nobody in the shuttle bay?
Or a manned shuttle bay as well. Although then again, maybe that's the red shirt that gets killed every week.
It could be. I mean, I would think there's two people in the shuttle bay at all times, even though shuttles go out once every other month. And so you've got to have these two guys. So let's call them Frankie and Tommy. And Frankie's telling Tommy about his last holodeck date. When they both look down and say, "Why is Commander LaForge in here? Wait, why is somebody going to the shuttle? Why are they initiating a launch? What? How are the doors opening? Do you think we should let the bridge know about this?" You never know.
Mm-hmm.
So they go ahead and they do it. And now we have to turn this tolerance up even further, because now we know that the Hera is down there and Geordi can save him if he could just get closer, closer, and closer. Okay, yes. 100% of tolerance to me says there's no more tolerance. If we creep it up just a little bit at a time,
we can get a squeeze a little bit more out of him, can't we?
Yeah. You can go beyond 100%, right? Have you not given 110%, Lou?
You know, I'm not sure, because if it can give 110%, then the scale needs to be rearranged to call that 110 100. There's a reason why you max out something, not to squeeze a little bit more, because if you could, that's where the 100% should be. Am I right? I mean, I consider you a pretty smart guy with the PhD. I got a feeling your math skills trump mine. I'll say Biden now. Biden mine about 150% of my knowledge of math is probably where you're at. Don't you think if it could go above 100, that should be the 100?
Okay, so Lou, we're dancing around something here, which is that you have seen this is Spinal Tap, right?
I think I have. Oh God, a long time. I don't remember, to be honest.
And the joke about it, the amps allowed it because it goes all the way up to 11, and it's like, well, why didn't you make the 10 that loud? And the guy just doesn't understand. He goes, but this goes to 11. I guess, yeah, but you could just make the 10 that loud and call it 10. So, no, but this goes up to 11. You're just repeating. You're just repeating what they did in the film.
Yeah, it has to be 11. That makes perfect sense. You know, why 88 miles an hour to get a DeLorean to go through time? Why not 70 miles an hour or 100 miles an hour? You know, why 1.21 gigawatts when it's supposed to be gigawatts? Why 1.21? What happens if you get 1.22? Some, I would imagine some lightning bolts are 1.27 and others are 1.12. Or are they all 1.21? And here's another thing. The clock tower is struck at precisely, what was it, 120 and something seconds or something, whatever it was. How did they know the lightning bolt hit at 1:20 a.m. and 00 seconds? And if it did, a lightning bolt, does it really travel down the length of a metal wire till it hits those two connectors and touches the flux capacitor? Or does it just electrocute the entire thing at the same time?
As close to anything, it travels down at the speed of light. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't see it tracking down.
No, I wouldn't think so. And not to mention that, Doc Brown's got his hands on there. No, he's not gonna make the connection and then fall down and wake up. Ooh. Wow. He made it! Running down the street. I hate to say this, but a lightning bolt, his eyeballs are no longer there. His brain is fried. Well, Doc Brown's brains were kind of fried, but that makes no sense to me. Hey, why don't we do a review of Back to the Future someday? But for now, so we find out that it wasn't Geordi's mom. There's no Hera. These are aliens that got snagged by this ship as it was trying to go back up, and they accidentally killed the crew.
Yeah, so this isn't the first time the accidentally captured aliens, right? And I don't think it's going to be the last time of the accidentally captured aliens either. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably worthwhile for all of these similar stories to be put into a list so that I can keep track of them in my mind. I think one of the disappointing things about this episode is that it does touch onto these stories that we've had kind of partially explained, you know, elsewhere in the series. So this kind of story, I mean, I think it also is something I mentioned last time. This kind of story would have probably worked in season 3. Had they done it then. I think it doesn't work when it's so late in the game and after us having touched on a lot of this stuff before, and it's just not, you know, it just seems to be lacking. So, yeah, I mean, am I alone in getting vibes that when they say about, you know, the aliens coming, being brought aboard, you know, we've heard that before, right? And I think we will hear it again.
Yeah, how about the alien prisoners?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, in Power Play.
Yeah.
But then at least there was like a different, you know, the episode was the episode was stylistically different as well. It was a very clear kind of like shift. It was a real different way of phrasing it. Whereas this week has been, it's a very pedestrian story, right? And it does hark back to, you know, the earlier seasons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, like you say, had we thought of something like that in the beginning, we could keep a running tally of, like, how many times Data tries to take over the ship, how many times does Wesley save the ship, how many times does Picard's orders, how many acts of what really is mutiny. We could have done that. So, if I know you want to do a DS9, but if we ever went on to Voyager, that might be a good idea to do. How many shuttles got destroyed? Somebody's already done it, but we'll do it ourselves, you know, as we're watching. Or how many torpedoes do they fire when they had 32 and no way to make more?
Yep, and the crew as well. How many crew did they lose? Or in fact, you know, I'm sure there are more than, it's supposed to be like 150 crew, right? There are more than 150 actors that were on Voyager as crewmen. So that's something that you can certainly keep track of.
Well, I think you might have to do that because when you think about it, it'd be hard for me to remember or write down or keep a log of what crew members' faces are in the mess hall today versus tomorrow or the next day. And so I don't know how you'd possibly keep a running crew of how many, running count of how many crew members, distinct crew members we see in each episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I remember complaining one time, why did it take so long for Naomi to pop out of the hatch, so to speak?
Or I thought they explained that.
They did. I missed that part somehow, and I saw it. It's about the time that Janeway went back in time to where, you know, hey, is Ms. Ensign Wildman pregnant? I can't tell you that. And so, yeah, half Katarian, half, which should double the gestation period. I'm like, gosh darn it, that's solved right there alone. Now explain why Alexander goes from 5 to how old,
wait,
how
he's Klingon.
Old he was. Yeah, Klingon, that's true. So he could have been 13 in the DS9 episode. maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, no wonder Worf injured that guy when playing football, right?
Well, yeah.
He would have been like 4 foot taller than the rest of his classmates.
Sure. Yeah. I wonder how many times he went out with the human females and bit them. Well, that's right. Human females are too fragile. Oh, yeah? And he actually told that to Tasha Yar, so yeah, right. Okay, so let's see. Oh, so Geordi gets the ship down far enough and the trapped aliens are able to go back to the planet. Thank you. And we never find out the status of Geordi's mom ever again.
Yeah, I think that's silly, right? Uh-huh. It's nothing definitive comes out of it, and you're left with the idea that, okay, either his mom did die or didn't, but it doesn't matter, and it's never brought up, which kind of just belittles a lot of the emotional investment that we're expected to make in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I guess Captain LaForge is pretty much Schrodinger's cat at this point. You agree?
Well, Yeah, sure, but she shouldn't be.
She shouldn't be, no. I mean, you would think, you know, but yeah. No, that's where they, that's essentially where they left it. They mm-hmm. think she's lost. They think she might be dead. She actually appears, so, but it's not really her. So she's either dead or she's both dead and alive at this point. So Schrodinger's cat. Let's see. Oh, so they have to, once it was done, they have to wean Geordi off of this interface. And believe it or not, Dr. Crusher, she does, for the second time in one episode, she does it right, and Geordi's just fine. Yeah. So, anyway. Okay, that's the end of that. Oh, no, it's not. No, it's not. Picard has to decide what to do about these two miscreants who violated his orders. LaForge, I'm sorry about what you're going through, but guess what I'm going to do to your permanent record? Yeah. Yeah, I understand, Captain. I'm screwed. But we know that's not true because we happen to know for a fact Geordi does go, in fact, go on to become a starship captain. Mm-hmm. Right?
Indeed, yeah.
And we're left with wondering, what was Data's punishment? Same thing, just a permanent record blot?
Well, Data never leaves Picard's side, so it's, you know, kind of academic for him, right?
Right. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah. All right, then. That's it. Did I leave a lot of it out?
No, not at all. Not at all.
It's a good discussion, actually. Yeah. You know.
Lou, don't you have to run? And we do need to do final ratings.
Yes. Yeah, I do got to be going here soon. But so it is time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. And, okay, I'm going to go first again. Okay, so, you know something? I'm actually changing my thoughts. I've got this whole thing that says, you know, I just didn't get really into the episode very much. They didn't explain where the probe comes from. They don't explain why we see Geordi, but he sees... We don't know what he sees. He could just be sarcastically saying, as he looks at a white probe, "Huh, what a handsome guy I am." Or he could actually be seeing his own reflection. We don't know. They don't explain it. The text-splain doesn't really clear up any of the confusion either. Why would his hands get burned? That makes no sense. Why would a computer officer, a android, disobey orders so easily? I don't believe that for a second. The Data is just going to go, "Well, I don't want you to get hurt. So instead of stopping you, I guess, you know, I'll do it with you." I don't buy that. But having talked to you, James, actually, I'm a little bit better on this episode. Some of this is pretty interesting. I do like Madge Sinclair. It was nice to have her on. But we don't know whatever happened to her. We don't know what happened to the crew. It's never discussed again. I would have liked to, in the next episode, spend 2 minutes, five minutes in Counselor Troy's office talking about the death of his mother as they found her. Or... you're in 10 forward celebrating the fact that his mother's ship was found. They're all safe. Everybody's good. I think they could have written that into next episode. But the reason I suspect they didn't is because they don't want story arcs. They want where a syndicated show could be popped any episode you want at any time, and it all blends in with each other. So that's my guess as to why they wouldn't do such a thing. But how do you explain two-parters dead in the center. And we had one, I think we had one this season. Two-part episodes. Yeah, Chain of Command Part 1 and Part 2. And a Birthright Part 1 and Part 2. So how do... oh, that was Season 6. Gambit Part 1 and Part 2 is where we're at next. Yep. So how do you explain why they did that? And even Descent Part 1 and Part 2, the cliffhangers. How do television stations just pick Part 2 but not pick Part 1, or do they avoid them at all costs? I don't know. So, okay. I honestly came into this podcast with the 2 because I was just a little down. But you know something, talking to you, I think maybe it was a little better than that. Not much. I can't give it a 4. So, yeah. I think I'm going to increase my score to a 3.
Okay, hang on. So, Lou, this is silly because I come into the episode. I think this deserves a 2. But you end up talking to me and somehow you upgrade your 2 to a 3 on the back of a conversation with me where I'm giving it a 2.
That makes sense.
if anything, I was probably coming in at like 3 and I came down to a 2 after having spoken to you. By the way, I don't buy this idea that you can't have follow-up in the series. I understand that you don't want it to be a continual arc, and I don't like continual arcs as being the only way of storytelling. But in this season, we're going to get a follow-up to the Damon Bock saga. So, you know, why you couldn't have just done a callback and said, hey, you know, there's another... You can have a mystery here and then a mystery a little bit later about Geordi's mom, or even just a throwaway line. The fact that it was never mentioned ever again is odd in my mind. Now about this episode, I think that we're in a world here where they're clearly clearing the decks on some of the ideas that they've had or that they want to get, you know, shoehorned into the final season. This is a mediocre episode that has, you know, a couple of ideas, right? So I'm sure up on the ideas board, there's been, you know, Geordi's mum and, you know, Geordi using an interface or, you know, this kind of stuff. It's stuff they've probably pulled down and they've thought, well, how can we wrap a story around this? And I don't think it's really special enough to get rated much higher. That's, you know, it's not objectionable. It's not painful to watch in my mind. I think last week was more painful. But it's kind of like mediocre, and it's not what you would expect when the show is firing on all cylinders. But you know, maybe the reality of the situation is that maybe the show is not firing on all cylinders anymore because the production staff are extremely stretched and there's 3 shows effectively being made at this point, with the film also being, you know, generations being planned at least. So, you know, under those circumstances, right, if this year you're putting out 52 episodes of Trek and next year you're putting out 52 episodes of Trek, that's a heck of a lot of Trek to find. You know, nowadays we've waited nearly 2 years for the 3rd season of Discovery, and they're going to put out 10 episodes this year, yeah. Of which most of it's going to be strung together. So when you look back at the in the 90s, and you actually had a 52 episodes of Star Trek being produced a year for a full, how long did they do it for? They did it for a full 7 years, right? So for the entirety of the S9's run, there was another show on the air. So the overlap would have been 7 years. They did 2-year overlap with TNG and then 5-year overlap with Voyager. And maybe in the latter years that we're seeing here, maybe it's just it's hard to the transition over to the 2 separate shows being running in parallel, maybe it's just hard to keep the writing crews and to have scaled up so much to expect these ideas to come out. But anyway, you know, I don't hate this. I think this is, you know, mediocre, and there are plenty of decent things in season 7 to look forward to. and but this one's not, yeah, not really that great.
So as I look through this list, and I wonder, better things to look forward to. I like Journey's End.
Journey's End is another one where they wrap it up, right? So it's like, oh, yeah, didn't we do that thing about the Traveler a while back?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that comes back.
Remember the Traveler? The creepy Traveler? Okay.
Okay, look, there's plenty of decent stuff coming up. Okay, let me. Okay, I'm going to start. Start at the back end. All Good Things is great. Preemptive Strike is perfectly fine. Okay, not good, not good, not good, not good. Thine Own Selves is good. Thine Own Self is good. Lower Decks is great. Pegasus is great. Parallels is great. I like Gambit. I think Gambit's a great romp. You know, not the greatest two-parter in the world, of course not. You know, you can't put it up to Chain of Command and the like, but it's not the worst two-parter they've done.
Okay, well, we'll find out next week, won't we? Or
yes,
next time. I like to say next week, but we mean next time. You know, that's the problem with COVID. You know, if my wife has to come down here 5 days a week and use my computer, it's the only one I can use to produce a show like this, and it's the only one she can use that has a high speed connection that will remote her into her work station. And so, you know, this is what happens. And when either you and I have a hiccup for something that, you know, we could have in the past, we just change it to the Tuesday or change it to the Thursday, but we just can't do that no more. So we are down to 2 days a week, and unfortunately, life happens. And so we're doing the best we can, but sometimes things just occur. So if that's why we're gone so long, blame COVID. COVID has screwed so many things up in life. But the only good thing that's happened for us is not having to get up and take my wife to work every day. This has been a blessing that she just gets up, she goes downstairs, she loves it. She's still in her PJs. She works all day long. I don't bother her. I don't come down. She'll come up on her breaks, and she'll visit with me for a while, or unless I'm gone out and gone working for the day or doing something like that. So that's the only blessing. Almost losing my sister to COVID, that's an unacceptable risk. And, you know, this is something that is really troubling, is that so many people are dying from this thing. And we're still in testing phases of vaccines. We'll see what happens. But, wow. It's been a strange one, hasn't it? I think, you know, we're over 200 and some thousand people strictly to COVID, not including the regular flu, not including other forms of death as well. It's just amazing that the population seems to be correcting itself for some reason. I don't know why that, I don't know if that's a really cool thing to say or not. So, okay, guys. So, James, you going to go to bed now?
Uh-huh. It's bedtime.
It's bedtime. So everyone, join us next time as we review episode 4, and that will be Gambit Part 1. So take care and good night.
Okay, and good night.
I'm Nighty Nate. All right. Okay. Press you can...
Close button. Not the close button.